Hey listeners, I usually talk to Randy when we record our intro, but this week I'm talking to you. How you doing?
You know that they can't actually answer you, Lily. I mean, not in real time anyway.
Well, I'm just checking in to see if they're cool, you know, making sure we're listening to our listeners.
Okay, I see what you're trying to do. This has something to do with inviting our customers in, you know, to be part of the whole product development process, isn't it?
Yes, listeners, Randy is right.
I heard that!
This week, we're talking to Peter Yang, product lead at Reddit and creator economy expert. We had a great chat with Peter about creating products for creators, very meta, and also what it means to do community-led product development.
Peter's also been at Twitch and Facebook and at Twitter, but we're the creators of this podcast, so, you know, we hit him up for some advice that should be useful for all of you, too. Let us know what you think.
Let's get to the chat. The product experience is brought to you by Mind the Product.
Every week, we talk to the best product people from around the globe about how we can improve our practice and build products that people love.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and to discover an extensive library of great content and videos.
Browse for free or become a Mind the Product member to unlock premium articles, unseen videos, AMAs, roundtables, discounts to our conferences around the world, training opportunities, and more.
Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities, and there's probably one near you.
Peter, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
For anyone who doesn't already follow your writing, can you just give us a quick introduction? Tell us what you're doing these days and how did you get into product?
Yeah, so right now I am a product lead at Reddit. I'm also a wannabe Twitter influencer. I try to publish content on the creator economy. And it was pretty hard for me to get into product. I think, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I was at Facebook working in marketing. And I tried to transition to product for like 3 years in a row and couldn't make it through the loop. And then someone actually told me like, hey, you're the person who tried the most in this company to try to transition internally. Like maybe you should, think about externally or something. And then, yeah, eventually because I was lucky enough to be part of the live video team at Facebook, I built expertise in that industry. So I was able to transition to Twitter as a live video PM. So it was probably like a 3 or 4 year journey to become a product manager. Yeah.
Fantastic. And when you finally landed in role, was it what you expected it to be or how was it different?
Yeah, I think it's pretty different. I mean, I think when I was working in marketing, I really wanted to have input on the product itself as opposed to just how to launch the product, right? But after I became a PM and as I become more experienced, I think a PM is someone who is much more of a facilitator. Someone who actually pulls the best opinions out of other people, out of your team, and also, you know, very importantly, out of customers, and kind of like leads the team towards building the right product that solves the real customer problem. So it's less someone who's calling the shots and more someone who's trying to drive the effort forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about how the customer can be part of your team later. But before we get into that, one of the things that you are known for writing about and that you are quite expert in is the creator economy, which you mentioned earlier. So for anyone who hasn't heard the term before, what is the creator economy?
Yeah, so I mean, let's start with what is a creator, right? So I think a creator is anyone who is trying to make a living publishing content online. And that can include like YouTubers that upload videos. It can include, you know, podcasters. It can include writers. It can even include like community builders trying to build an online community or like game developers trying to make some sort of virtual world. So it's anyone who wants to make a living online. And the creator economy has really taken off. I think recently, like it's what all the VCs and everybody talks about. And I think there's a couple of reasons why. I think people in general are trusting brands and platforms less. They trust other people more. So, and I think the platforms are starting to realize that, you know, historically you grow through SEO, you grow through paid ads. But right now, if you don't have like a creator as part of your growth strategy, you're kind of like falling behind the curve, because they just, these creators, these top creators have so many followers and fans, and they have like so much influence over what their fans do that you kind of need to make it part of the part of your acquisition strategy. A second thing I think is like, you know, more and more people want to work for themselves. And I think a creator is kind of like an interesting middle ground between a, you know, a fan PM, right? And also someone who is like a tech entrepreneur. It's a good middle ground because you can basically scale to millions of people, millions of fans, and, you know, make millions of dollars with just like a, either just by yourself or with a very small team. And, you know, the internet has made it possible for anyone to kind of publish content around like a niche and reach a large audience. And I think that's really powerful, right? And I think the third thing is like, you know, COVID happened. So all of a sudden, you know, people were forced to teach yoga classes online, form communities online, and basically learn how to make money online. And people are starting to realize sitting at home in their pajamas that they can actually, you know, do some side gigs and like start making money themselves, as opposed to just being part of a corporation.
So, yeah. You're defining it a little bit narrowly. So I just want to dig into that. You got into the fact that it's someone who can scale to that level. Is that why you define it as someone who creates online content rather than, say, someone who's got an Etsy shop?
I consider Etsy shop as a creator too, for sure. Yeah, I mean, they basically have an online portal that sells offline goods. I think most people talk about creators in terms of like people selling digital goods, but I definitely think like, you know, e-commerce counts too.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how do you cater specifically to creators? What is different about trying to solve for them rather than for any other persona type?
Yeah. I think, you know, when I was at Twitch, it was pretty hammer home to me that creators have three main needs, and that's money, fame, and love. So what does that mean? So love comes from the joy of just making great content and from talking to your fans. And fame comes from, you know, after you make good content, you can start growing an audience and you can start kind of building a community. And money comes from making a living from the audience, you know, either getting your fans to pay you directly or finding sponsors or some other way to make money, right? So those are kind of like the three high level needs. I think there's like a fourth need that people don't really talk about, which is mental health. You would think that, you know, creators are kind of like, you know, entrepreneurs, small businesses, so they have like more free time. But most of the time, that's not the case. They are kind of, they need to produce content all the time and talk to fans all the time. Otherwise, they're going to fall behind. So there's a lot of pressure for them to perform. And I think mental health is like a very important need too. Yeah.
It's really interesting hearing you talk about it because so my husband is a musician and sells some of his music online. So a lot of what you're saying rings true of just, you know, that pressure as well of having to create and try and generate income from, you know, from essentially your passion. And it is a very unique, you're right, it's a very kind of unique group of people. So when you're creating solutions and products for people in this space, what are some of the kind of, you know, keys to success for creating products for these people?
Yeah, I think the first thing is you have to be really genuine and authentic with creators. They're creative people, right? So if you talk to them from a perspective of like, hey, you know, you know, here's my platform, I want to grow users on my platform, you know, let's help make money for you and for my platform, they're not going to resonate very well with what you're saying. I mean, right now you're at a situation where any creator with any, you know, like a decent size audience is getting pinned by multiple creator economy companies all the time. So you really have to speak their language and really have their needs in mind when you're talking to them. So yeah, I think being authentic is the first thing. Second thing is just like actually building a community and, you know, working with them. We'll talk about that later. But actually, like, you know, making them partners, like instead of building for creators, you should build with creators, make them partners in your product development. And that can go all the way into actually, you know, a lot of these companies these days actually have their top creators invest in the company. So that actually aligns in interests. And a creator as an investor can not only help you, you know, get some funding, but they also have the reach and the audience to help you get the word out about your company, right? So that's huge. And yeah, like try to solve one of their main problems, whether it's money, fame, or love, and try to solve it in a unique way. Like try to solve, like there are certain segments of creators that have much bigger pain points than others. So for example, if you're focused on, you know, like you can consider a VC as a creator, right? They're tweeting, and writing thought leadership articles online. But, you know, compare, if you're trying to help people make money and you're trying to help VCs make money versus help musicians make money, that's a huge difference. One is like a hair on fire problem. And another one is just like a nice to have. So try to solve a burning pain point. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm curious, is there a trick to engaging creators and getting them into that co-building process? Because, you know, I try and do this with all of my customers. Whatever it is they're trying to do, they're trying to succeed at something. It may be a slightly different way, and I want them to get it as involved as I can. I want to co-create with them where possible. What's the secret to doing it with creators specifically?
I think one trick is creators are very public, right? They are, you know, their content is all over Instagram, Twitter, or whatever their platform choices. So a lot of entrepreneurs and PMs reach out to creators without doing their research. If you just take like half an hour to look through their Instagram feed or like, you know, whatever social media presence they have, you probably can get a pretty good understanding of what unique problem they're struggling with right now, you know? And you can tailor your outreach in a way that kind of directly addresses that problem. And they're much more likely to respond if you do that. And I think another thing to think about is that I would say 99% of the time, a creator will always want to grow their audience bigger, you know? Like even like Mr. Beast still wants to grow his audience. So if you can find some way to help them like reach a new you know, fan base or like grow their audience, that's always something that I think they'll be interested in.
So one of the things that must be like a real challenge is just getting started from scratch. Like obviously we know some of the big platforms like Spotify that enable people to discover new music, or the all the references that I have are all music related, and Bandcamp as well. But how do you, if you want to provide a platform for creators, how do you kickstart that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think there's something called the creator growth loop, and it can be different growth loops whether you're focused on money, fame, or love. So the typical growth loop is something like this. You target a very niche segment of creators, people who are already pretty established, and then you give them either money, fame, or love. And then hopefully these creators are, you know, happy enough that they will bring their fans to your platform. And some of those fans are other creators, and they'll start, that the flywheel will kind of take off after that, right? So just to make that a little bit more tangible, you know, like a money growth loop is something like Cameo, right? Cameo is focused on celebrity personalized video shoutouts. Because these celebrities can make money on the platform, they'll bring more fans to the platform and more of these people will get onboarded as creators. A fame growth loop, the perfect example is TikTok, right? Like in the beginning, you have a higher chance of taking off and growing your audience on TikTok and going viral than on Instagram or some other established platform. So as a result, more and more creators came to try to kind of grow their audience. And finally, for Love Loop, I think Discord is a good example of Love Loop. Discord, you know, is like this chat app. It doesn't actually help you grow your audience or make money, but it helps you engage with your fan community. And because it does such a great job at doing that, more and more creators will set up their Discord server and kind of engage your fans through that platform. So yeah.
Is there anything else that these creator platforms have in common that have made them successful? Because I feel like there's a real kind of desire for people to want to provide platforms for creators, but often don't quite get it right.
Yeah. I think another common trait is that there's founder market fit. So a very good path to success is you start by being a creator yourself. I mean, it's kind of like what I'm doing, right? I'm trying to be a creator myself. I'm trying to grow an audience around my niche. And by the time I actually have a good product idea or I want to start something, I already have, you know, tens of thousands of people or hundreds of people following me. And with a big audience, it's pretty easy to have your product take off because it reaches the biggest hurdle. So yeah, be a creator yourself. Like Jack Conte was a musician before he started Patreon. What are some other good examples? There's just a lot of different examples out there.
Yeah.
Well, let's dig into some of this, because obviously Lily and I are creators as well. We've got the podcast going, yeah. And it's not often we get to talk to an expert who can help us on our things. I think you've written about some keys to success that you've observed for creators in general. What are the two or three biggest ones, the pieces of advice that you'd give to someone who is trying to be a creator, or for someone who's trying to create a tool for creators to unlock their psychology?
I think it's the same. Yeah, I think it's similar advice for someone trying to grow as a creator to someone trying to build a creator company. I think you got to follow the right steps, right? So the first step is to find the right niche, find what you're good at and find what people are interested in and kind of target that niche. Second step is to solve a problem, right? Solve a problem that people have. Like a creator maybe, you know, solving a problem. Like I'm solving a problem with people who want to learn about the creator economy or see memes about the creator economy. and like a company might be solving for money, fame, or love. So solve the right problem and then use the growth loop to kind of like, you know, grow through that loop. And also like make the loop grow faster by doing things that don't scale. By like building a creator community, talking to them every day, making them like your loyal first customers so that they will help promote your product. And then after that, you're kind of like the growth loop will be kind of like, you know, accelerating, and you can think about monetization and other stuff down the line.
Fancy leveling up your product management skills?
Always.
Are you ready to take that next step in your product career?
Of course.
Well, you're in luck. Mind the Product is offering interactive remote workshops where you can dedicate 2 half days to honing your product management craft with a small group of peers.
You'll be coached through your product challenges by your expert trainer and walk away with frameworks and tools you can use right away. You can choose from product management foundations, communication and alignment, metrics for product managers, or mapping to solve product problems.
Find out more and book your place on a monthly workshop at mindtheproduct.com/workshops. That's mindtheproduct.com/workshops. So let's talk about monetization, because that's one of the hardest things. It's easy for people to throw things out there. You can get people to consume or and get lucky every once in a while. But you're lucky enough to get your 100 or 1,000 true fans. And yeah. Now you want to make a living off of them. Where do you start with that?
So I think the first step is to think about your fans as a kind of like a demand curve. Like we all learned this in Economics 101. Where let's say you have, you know, 10,000 fans, probably 9,000 are going to be like casual fans who like your content, but probably won't pay anything for your stuff, right? And then maybe there's like 900 who are like more active fans. They may be willing to pay like $5 a month to get access to you or like get some exclusive content. And then there's probably going to be like 10, there's probably going to be like 100 or less like super fans or true fans who will pay a lot. And I think a lot of creators underestimate exactly how much these true fans will pay. They will pay like a boatload, right? And this is also part of why like this NFT thing is taking off, because NFT is probably better at monetizing your true fans than any other vehicle. So if you think about it, maybe you have like, you know, advertising like on YouTube for your casual fans, and then you have subscriptions for your active fans, and then maybe you have like NFTs or tipping or some other like you know, quote unquote whale product for your true fans. And with that portfolio of products, that's how you kind of make money, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I guess one more thing is that, you know, companies are probably going to pay a lot more than consumers. So beyond your true fans, think about how you can get like a brand or like a company to sponsor you. And I think you'll probably earn a lot more through that too. Yeah.
And so I'm very familiar with the kind of ads and subscription side of things, but NFTs, like what are they? How do people use them these days?
Yeah. NFT is called non-fungible token, but basically what it does, it allows a fan to own a piece of your content, right? So like if you put a piece of art out there, and the fan actually buys the NFT for the art, technically there's a record online that shows that they own this content now, and they can resell it to someone else. So the reason, and I think that's really powerful, right? Because in a typical platform like YouTube or Instagram, the creator doesn't own the content and the fan doesn't own the content. Actually, who owns the content is actually the platform itself. But what an NFT does is it allows the creator to own the content and sell the content to the fans. So it kind of cuts out the middleman and it allows the fan to basically, you know, pay a lot to have ownership over the content.
So NFTs are good from that perspective because you're giving someone a premium, an exclusive thing. Yeah. We talked about ads. That's kind of the bottom of the barrel stuff. Mm. But both of those are either one time or traffic generated. Mm. What about recurring revenue? I mean, that's the real trick, isn't it? You want to get predictable, and we all like steady, predictable growth, don't we?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, when I worked at Twitch, subscriptions is basically like the bread and butter. And yeah, like, you know, it might feel nice to make some money through like a big tip or like some other, you know, NFT. But if you want to go full-time and make a living as a creator without worrying about your paycheck, you know, you have to keep growing the subscriptions. And the other thing about subscriptions is that the churn is like, you know, a little bit lower. The income is a lot more predictable than any other, you know, monetization channel. So a lot of people are focused on subscriptions. The problem with subscriptions right now is that the platform takes like a huge cut of it, right? Like Twitch takes 50% cut. If people buy it through like, you know, mobile, Apple takes like a 30% cut. It's just like, you know, what ends up, if someone pays a creator $5 a month, the creator might only end up with like $1 or $2. So they need to get like a lot of subscriptions to actually kind of like sustain themselves. So you need kind of that base layer of subscriptions, but you also need the whale stuff around like gifted subscriptions or like NFTs or tips.
It's really tricky, isn't it? Because you've got a lot of kind of struggling creators out there, and then these big platforms or these small platforms that grow into big platforms that then take the small amount of like big chunks of the small amount of money that they are earning. Do you foresee in the future like a tip of that balance and that changing?
Yeah, I think the good news is that it's happening right now because the creator economy is taking off, because creators wield so much power and trust now. You see a lot of platforms like Twitter, like Facebook, cutting the take rate that they take to like 20% or less. And you know, their play is that, you know, the creator will stay on the platform and they can ultimately make more money from more eyeballs and more ads. Right. So that's kind of their play. But I think it's still good for the creator because now the creator can keep more of their subscriptions, keep more of their tips.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to create tools for these people, is this really just a race to the bottom, or is there some room for innovation and doing something really new?
Yeah, I think if you think about a creator as a small business, I think, you know, growing your audience is a problem, making money is a problem. But I think there's a whole unexplored area. Like these creators don't have real financial help or healthcare, or it's very hard for them to find, you know, video editors, find like moderators to help their community. So that whole space, I think, is like pretty untapped. I think there's like a lot of companies that could come out of that space. But if you're competing directly with Twitter or Facebook on like monetization, it might be a hard road ahead, unless you can go into like the crypto space or something that's a little bit more differentiated.
This is like the story about the gold rush. You know, there was a whole bunch of people who came out as prospectors and tried to make money panning for gold, but the people who did the best were the ones who sold them the supplies.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's kind of like Stripe, right? They're like the infrastructure, and they just keep making money as other companies make money. Yeah.
And you mentioned a couple of times earlier about kind of bringing the customer into the conversation as you're creating platforms or products for creators. I think you called it at one point community-led product development. Mm-hmm. So what does that actually mean? How, like, you know, we're familiar with user research and user testing, but is community-led product development going beyond that?
Yeah, I think so. So I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here, right? So like,
okay. Go for it.
You know, I've worked at a lot of these big tech companies, and what I see a lot in the PMs at these companies is that they spend all their time talking to internal stakeholders. They run A/B tests, they look at metrics, and they don't actually talk to customers themselves. And in fact, if they try to talk to customers themselves, they get their hands slapped. They're like, hey, you didn't follow this 10-step process, or didn't check if it's legal, or like, you get your hand slapped, right? And I think that's kind of sad, to be honest with you, because for me as a PM, what the highlight of my day, you know, is talking to customers, and like what I aim to do at the end of every day is like, did I ship value to customers or not? Did I make someone happy? Did I actually make a customer happy, not an internal stakeholder, right? So I think the power of community-led product development is twofold. One is that the feedback loop is dramatically increased. Like if you rely on user research or like wait for some big panel to talk to customers, like focus group, you probably talk to customers maybe like once a month. But here, if you actually build a community, and when I say building a community, I simply mean inviting a couple of early adopters into like a Slack group or like a Discord so you can talk to them, right? If you actually do that and you talk to them every day, they become like part of your team. Just like how you talk to your designer or engineer every day, you can talk to them every day. And it's incredibly powerful because like you can talk to them about any kind of new problem that comes up on a daily basis, and they can provide their voice the same way that internal stakeholders provide their voice. And it helps you build better products. The other part of it that's really powerful is that you start understanding these people a lot more. You start kind of like walking in their shoes, because you don't just talk about the product in these Discord servers or, you know, in the Slack groups. You actually talk about their lives and how they're doing, right? And you start identifying problems that you actually haven't even thought about. Maybe that's actually maybe more important than a problem that you're trying to work on right now. So yeah, it just feels like you have this core team that's kind of your company and your product team, but you also have a larger circle of early adopters. And I feel much more confident building products with the community than without.
So we've all met that executive who comes by and says, hey, I just talked to a customer and they said this.
Yeah.
So how do you avoid over-indexing towards a couple of influential people that are on that Slack or Discord and recency bias and things like that?
Yeah, so those are all definitely concerns. And, you know, I'm not saying you should ignore A-B tests or like the stats or like, you know, the other channels. But I think those concerns are often pretty overblown. If you're working on a 0-to-1 product, you're going to have to rely on your early adopters to adopt the product anyway, right? So the people who are most passionate about it are probably the people who are in your community who are going to try it out first. Second thing is, I mean, there are some basic things you can do to not ask leading questions and not like get a biased answer. Like I think there's this book called The Mom Test that I really recommend to do customer research. But yeah, just like keep a balance of all the channels. And, you know, some of these communities, they grow into 10,000 people communities or like, you know, a very large community. And at that point, you don't actually get biased input. You actually get like a pretty good sample of what customers think.
And are there any companies that you're aware of that are kind of doing this really well?
Yeah, I'll give a couple of examples. So I think when TikTok first started, you know, the TikTok team is based in China, right? And it was called Musical.ly back in the day. And they were a team based in China building products for American teens. So they basically put everyone into like a WeChat group, which has like China's, you know, messenger. And they were talking to these American teens every day and building products for them. And I think that's a really good example of why they succeeded. Another great example is what Twitter is doing with Spaces, their audio product. They aren't actually doing it in a closed community, as far as I can tell. They're just like tweeting out Figma designs and what they're planning. And they're getting like a lot of good feedback publicly about the product. And I think that's definitely helping them kind of like build the right experience. And at Reddit, where I work right now, you know, moderators are our most important customer segment, right? Because they actually control the subreddits that, you know, makes Reddit a platform. And historically, like, you know, the relationship between Reddit and the moderators has not been very good. But I basically have a private community where I talk to the, you know, let's say 100 or so mods every day, and I share designs. And I think I've really kind of won their trust. I actually have not shipped anything for them yet, but just by talking to them, they were like, well, this person actually talks to me and actually listens to my input. And so now they're like really eager to adopt whatever prods I have. And I think that has made a huge difference.
Do you find with Reddit that you have to kind of talk in the environment that they're comfortable in? And, you know, do you have to write to them rather than actually speaking to them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good news is that I'm working on a product called Reddit Talk where you can have live audio conversations. So I'm dogfooding that product with them where we can actually talk to each other through voice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But typically it happens through text. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So if a product manager is listening to this and thinking, well, that sounds great, and I think that would work for my product or for my business that I work for, how would you suggest that they get started with it?
With a community-led product development? You probably have to make a case for it if you're working at like a semi-big company. If you're working at a startup, I think you can just go do it. You can just like find a couple customers, make a Discord server or like a subreddit or something, and just start talking to your customers. But if you're working at like a semi-large company, you probably have to make an internal case for it. And I think you do that by pointing to examples of, you know, how it's done well in the past and maybe doing like a pilot or something. And I think my advice for PMs and larger companies who want to do this is there are processes in place, but like, don't let them stop you. Like, give people a heads up that you want to do this, but you know, go ahead and do it, right? Like, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, maybe some products will leak, but I think having that happen, the risk of having that happen is like so much lower than the value that you get out of talking to your customers every day.
Yeah.
And if you are trying to create and trying to become more of a creator yourself, what's one thing that you can do, someone can do tomorrow to get started or improve their efforts? What's one big secret?
I mean, I think this podcast is for PMs, right? And I think a lot of PMs, they haven't really woke up. They're trying to climb the career ladder in their company. And they're like, you know, well, I'm a Facebook employee. I'm a Google employee. I think instead of saying you're a Facebook employee, Google employee, say, like, try to build your own personal brand. I think that's like super important. So try to you know, use Twitter or write blog posts or do, you know, whatever you're passionate about, and try to build a personal brand around your niche. You know, obviously I would probably not be on this podcast if I didn't have a personal brand. And having a personal brand has really opened a lot of doors. You know, I met a lot of people through it. I built a reputation. I talked to all these product leaders all the time. And, you know, why let the VCs do it, right? I mean, the people who are actually making the sausage, the PMs and the product people, should actually take time to build a personal brand. Yeah.
Except that no one ever wants to see how the sausage is made. That'll turn you off forever.
I think people should see how the sausage is made. I mean, you know? Yeah, I mean, I have this meme where it's like a bell curve, where on one end you are posting thought leadership, and on the other end you're posting memes. In the middle, in the trail of despair, you're actually like, you know, talking to stakeholders, building products, doing testing. Like, that's the hard part, right? It's not like it's like thought leadership and memes. So show people that you're doing all this work, and like, I think build a personal brand through that.
Amazing, Peter. It's been really great talking to you today. Thank you so much for sharing everything. And yeah, if people want to read more, then we will share lots of notes in the show notes as well. So check them out.
Cool. Thanks. It was a pleasure.
It's a bit weird trying to talk to listeners who can't answer back. So I will talk to you again now, Randy, okay?
Oh, so now you want to talk to me? But now, you know, I want to actually talk to our listeners, because if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, we're hosting a special social event at MTP DigiCon tomorrow. Come join us for a special group therapy session after the main event on Thursday, the 15th of July.
See you there. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith, and
me, Randy Silver.
Emily Tate is our producer, and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arne Kittler, who runs Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. Connect with your local product community via Product Tank, our regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, you can consider starting one yourself. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.
Product Tank is a global community of meetups driven by and for product people. We offer expert talks, group discussion, and a safe environment for product people to come together and share learnings and tips.